Broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman and Kirk Crosby live on your radio. Hard-hitting news that networks refuse to use, no doubt, starts now. Ladies and gentlemen, this is indeed the broadcast for September the 25th in the year of our Lord, 2017. This is our one of two, and our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio in the traditions of our founding fathers. Yes, indeed, we stand for the blueprint for liberty, the supreme law of the land, the Constitution for the United States of America. We reject revolution, but stand for peaceful restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. Welcome to the broadcast. Hope you had a delightful weekend full of all things God, family, and country. And most importantly, we hope you understand when we recap our previous shows, it's because the issues are so relevant. Friday, we talked about Roy Moore spoke out against Graham Cassidy. What is that, you say? Graham Cassidy is the latest attempt by the Republicans to force Obamacare down our throats and codify it under the Republican leadership. Tragic but true, it's about to fail. Thank heavens for that. But Roy Moore, along with Rand Paul, Sam Bushman, and others, speaking out against it. It's a fiasco. Don't fall for the lie. Competing rallies in Alabama took place last weekend. The Republican swamp is desperate for a win as they back Luther Strange, but good, honest Americans are backing former Judge Roy Moore. We stand for Roy in that race. Time will tell. Tomorrow's the telltale reality check. We'll keep an eye on that ball just for you. Is drain the swamp dead, some are saying? Not even maybe our response. Let's make America great again. Good Americans are doing good things. Don't underestimate, even though the mainstream press doesn't report the good things that are happening. There are plenty of marvelous things going on in America. LibertyRoundtable.com is one of them. Anonymous donors, literally by printer's manuscript of Book of Mormon for $35 million. Brigham Young University ends six decades of no caffeinated drinks. Now they'll sell caffeinated drinks. Senator Graham calling for a carbon tax. GOP lawmakers are interested in taxing CO2 behind the scenes, folks. Apple reporting tech problems about their products before they even put their products up for sale. What kind of a twist is that? Are Apple's great days over? Only time will tell. Facebook will turn over copies of ads to Congress. The copies of ads were bought by Russians, they say, tampering in the elections of 2016. Donald Trump says it's all fake news. We'll keep an eye on that ball just for you. Maybe it wasn't Donald tampering with the Russians in the elections. Maybe it was Facebook, huh? All right, that was our 1 hour two. Our guest, Richard Mack, CSPWay.org, TheFreedomCoalition.com. We talked about the, quote, war of rhetoric. Donald puts new sanctions on North Korea. That's going south in a hurry as the pro-war generals surround the poor, innocent Donald Trump. He means well, but he's naive, to say the least. Quote, he can't hear you. Deaf man shot. Dead by Oklahoma City cop. What a tragic situation. We need constitutional sheriffs and peace officers association style training for de-escalation and to understand the proper role of a peace officer rather than a law enforcement bureaucrat. We talked about the Fourth Amendment in good news has been upheld by the Washington District of Criminal Courts. Court of Appeals there, they say, hey, you can't violate people's Fourth Amendments. Law enforcement's use of the, quote, cell site simulator used to track suspects' phones without warrants is unconstitutional, they say. Good for them. Wow, that's unheard of, but good news. Yeah, I told you there's a lot of good news going on that's not reported by the mainstream press. They don't like good news because it brings people together rather than divides people. The mainstream press spent the whole weekend talking about Donald battling with the NFL. We'll get into that if time permits as the broadcast unfolds. But now, that's a recap of Friday's broadcast, always available for free on demand at libertyroundtable.com. If you want to get involved in every way, including financial, would love it. libertyroundtable.com. Tell all your friends about incredible free talk radio, would you please? Without further ado, news that networks refuse to use starts now. Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org, back on your radio. Welcome, my friend.
Thanks for having me, gentlemen. Good to be with you.
All right. Looks like the GOP is battling in the state of Utah. This has national implications is why we bring it up. And I guess there's an epic battle happening today, right?
Today's the big day, Sam. September 25th, oral argument at the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals in Denver, Colorado. There, the court is going to hear from legal counsel both sides. Basically, you've got the party, the state GOP of Utah, is sued the state of Utah for infringing its right to assemble and to freely choose its candidate selection, you know, to determine its candidate selection process. Because in 2014, the state legislature passed a bill called SB 54, Senate Bill 54, which predetermined or which specified how a political party was to determine its candidate's, its nominee. And this candidate selection process that the legislature mandated basically infringed the party's ability to do it for itself, you know, how to choose its nominees. So anyway, that was the law that was passed in 2014. The state GOP in Utah sued the legislature, went to a federal district court. They won a count. They lost a couple of accounts and appealed those two. The two that they lost, they appealed to the 10th Circuit. And, typically in these cases, Sam, it's my understanding anyway, having talked to a few lawyers about it, that a court generally will not ask for oral arguments if the case is, you know, an open-shut case. If it's that, you know, straightforward, they'll just rule on it. But the fact that they want to hear oral arguments in this case suggests that they have some unanswered questions that they want the answers to. And so they're going to be asking the party's counsel and the state's counsel to answer those questions. And we are praying today that the judges will be inspired to ask insightful questions and then that they'll render a wise judgment in this case. So why is this important to everybody who's listening to this show? Well, because if the citizens of Utah lose the right to assemble and to lose the right to choose their candidate selection process, then citizens around the country might also suffer a similar fate. And we don't want that to happen, so I brought this up, wanted to raise this issue to ask for, you know, those of you who are listening today, ask for your prayers in behalf of this case. We really want to win this case so that the parties retain the rights to assemble, to freely choose their candidate selection process, because the caucus convention system in Utah is one of the last of its kind, and yet it is the very essence, the core of our Republican form of government.
Now, let's set up the background a little bit so people know what you're talking about. If you're not familiar with Utah, you may not understand the caucus system. Really, the issue has to do with representation, ladies and gentlemen. Are we a democracy or are we a republic? And we submit that we're a republic, ladies and gentlemen. The United States Constitution shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government. Now, I know even the president runs around to the United Nations and talks about our incredible democracy, but he's flat out clueless. No offense. If you don't believe me, go pledge allegiance to the United States. We don't talk about a democracy at all. Nevertheless, this republic or this republican proper role of government based on representation is the key here. And what's the epic battle about, you ask? The answer is how the Utah citizenry are represented, replete with checks and balances and the ability to vet candidates, et cetera, et cetera. And it all starts back when Mike Lee got elected.
It sure does, Sam. Bob Bennett was the sitting senator at the time. Orrin Hatch and Robert Bennett had been in the Senate for years and years, term after term. But because of his support for TARP and other bailouts in 2008, Robert Bennett lost his nomination at convention. The delegates of 2010 went to the convention and chose Mike Lee and Tim Bridgewater instead of William F. Bennett, and he was the sitting senator. And boy, did this shake the establishment! They realized that at that point they realized that they did not have a chokehold any longer on the caucus convention system here in Utah. These upstart delegates actually turned him out, and so he lost his seat in the Senate at the hands of the 4,000, at that time, 3,500 state delegates who had assembled to choose the party's nominee for the Senate. And so the deep-pocketed politicians in Utah, realizing that lost control of the caucus convention system, lost control of the delegate system, they decided to change it. And so in 2013, they formed a group called Count My Vote, abbreviated as CMV, with the stated purpose of modernizing Utah's current election system.
But really, it was to pervert it from a republic-style reality to a democracy-style circumvention of the people's true will and the check and balance process. Lil Nelson has details in seconds. Liberty Roundtable live.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the political cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today.
Politicians, bureaucrats, and educrats, and all do-gooders to please obey the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. This is Liberty Roundtable.
Lil Nelson, campaignforliberty.org, breaking down what's happening in Utah. Big epic lawsuits underway. At the heart of the lawsuit, are we going to literally turn the state of Utah into a democracy? Are we going to circumvent with big money the will, the rights, the checks and balances of the people? Or are we going to double down in support of a proper role of limited republic-style government, complete with its checks and balances and the will of the people, and a vetting process that makes sense? That's the debate. The battle's epic. It's been going on for several years now, and it's culminating. The only concern that I have is that a judge, the founding fathers intended that to be the least powerful branch of the three branches of government. Sadly, it's turning out to be the most powerful because we don't really obey the principles that made America great. The checks and balances are key here, and the epic battle is on, Lowell. So the issue here, though, is this battle taking place. I don't even think most people understand that it's happening, and I don't think they really have a stake in it because it's too complicated. They don't even understand it, right?
Well, that tends to be the case when you get lawyers arguing about the language in the law. Using legalese and highfalutin language is sometimes difficult to follow, but the bare bones essence of the case, Sam, is does a political party have the right to choose and to determine its own candidate's election process? If not, then that would allow the state to determine that process, and if the state determines the process, then is the political party really a private organization or not? I mean, is it just simply an organ then of the state itself? And if that's the case, then you know, are we really free as a people, as a citizenry, to make our own choices and to band together and to support people that we want to represent us in the deliberative bodies of the Congress of the U.S. United States. So, I mean, it's pretty it's a fundamental question, Sam. It has far-reaching implications, and that's why I'm bringing it to the fore this morning, because I hope that citizens throughout the country will recognize the importance of this case and will lend their prayers help and pleading for help in this case at the Tenth Circuit Court today. Obviously, there are oral arguments today. There's no guarantee that they're going to render a judgment, this week or this month. Sometimes it takes months for a judgment to be handed down, for an opinion to be rendered. But we hope that it comes quickly. We hope that it comes in our favor. Because we believe the citizenry has the right to choose, to determine their own candidate selection process. And the reason that's so important, ladies and gentlemen, is because we, until 2014, had a truly Republican form of government here in the state of Utah in the way that we chose our candidate. Every political party would gather in precinct meetings. We have over 2,000 precincts here in the state of Utah, each precinct having up to about 1,000, actually the number is 1,250 registered voters in each precinct. And everybody who is interested would gather in their precincts for their respective parties. You'd have precinct meetings for Republicans and precinct meetings for the Democrats. And anyway, they would, and for every party in the state, they would gather in these meetings, and they would choose their neighbors to represent them in the candidate vetting process. Now, this is strictly analogous to a jury, in my opinion, right? When a person is accused of a crime and is put on trial, not everybody in the city gets to vote on whether that person is guilty or not guilty, right? You don't have all 40,000 people of the community vote. What you do is you select 12 to 14 jurors who then spend a huge amount of their time vetting the evidence, listening to the oral arguments, listening to the stated testimony of the various witnesses brought forward for and against the defendant, right? That's how it works in a court of law. And this is very analogous to that. You have you have these delegates who vet the candidates who are seeking the nomination of the party. And these delegates spend hours and hours, far more than the typical common voter does at primary election time. They spend time interviewing the candidates one-on-one and in small group meetings, in cottage meetings, in town hall meetings, in debates, and listening to them speak on the radio and so forth. Through this whole process, they might spend 6 to 12 hours per candidate in listening to and vetting these candidates, and therefore they are enabled, they are empowered with this knowledge to choose the best candidate for the job, right? The candidate who understands the proper role of government, the candidate who will adhere to the Constitution,
the candidate who spends time enough to gain the hearts and minds of the delegates, literally put in place or elected, nominated, so to speak, by the people to do this work.
And that is the essence of our Republican system right here in Utah. Now, everybody, all the states of the Union had this system of government from the early days of the Republic. And in fact, they were called wards back in Massachusetts. And why did they call them caucuses? That has something to do with ship masters and cargo hold loaders and so forth on the docks of Massachusetts. So it has a historical origin, this word caucus. And we employed this throughout the country early on. And then one by one, states would turn away from that and go to a direct primary.
It reminds me of how they're trying to make the county sheriff toothless to turn him into a paper pusher and just serve, requests and things of this nature, as opposed to a real county sheriff. What they're doing is slowly but surely dismantling all the checks and balances that was a hallmark of a republic, ladies and gentlemen. Don't let them do it. The case is today. Hopefully Lowell will jump back on with us sometime this week and give us an update of what happened in that court case. We'll keep an eye on the ball, but our prayers are that we stand for a republic. We pray that we continue to keep a republican form of government and we don't dismantle the checks and balances. Any final tidbits on this?
You reminded me of one thing that I should mention, Sam, and that is that yesterday at our county party central committee meeting.
It was really Saturday, though, because yesterday was the Sabbath, but
oh,
I'm with
pardon.
You.
That's right. Thank you very much. Yesterday was a day of rest, and boy, did I need some rest. We all need.
I feel like I want to run around like the guys on Fiddler on the Roof and say, good Sabbath to you. Right?
That's right. On Saturday, at our central committee meeting, the good sheriff of Utah County, Jim Tracy, introduced to me a gentleman named Bob Durfee. I'm sorry, Darren Durfee. Darren Durfee, who is running for sheriff next year, Sam, right here in Utah County. And I only had time to quiz him for less than 90 seconds. I promised Darren that I would interview him at length in the near future. But
what I will do is I will set up a time for Sam Bushman, Sheriff Richard Mack, Lowell Nelson and Kirk Crosby to meet with this gentleman on a one-on-one and see if he'll meet with us because we really need to work on this in detail, Lowell. So I'll see if I can get Jim Tracy to help us set that up.
Wonderful. Exactly. I'd love to be a part of that. He claims that he understands the proper role of government, and he understands. He claims to understand what a constitutional sheriff is, and so we will put him to the test, Sam. I just wanted to give you the heads up on that.
Love it. Okay, so that's going on. There's a lot of good things happening, folks. This is the point behind the scenes. You may not hear about it because the mainstream press doesn't want you to know that good people are doing good things everywhere. But that's our quest, to make sure you know. That's why it's called news that the networks refuse to use.
And by the way, Sam,
yeah,
the reason I brought that up now is because this is the season where people ought to begin looking around for candidates for their sheriff in municipal office. This is the end of an odd-numbered year, right? And which means that we have about a year now to put together candidates for the sheriff. In most states, right, they elect public servants on a four-year cycle. Well, in Utah, anyway, we're getting near the end of our cycle for county offices, and so I believe it's next year or maybe a year after we're going to be filling this seat here. And so basically I just mentioned it to encourage all of our listeners, Sam, to be thinking. I mean, you should never stop thinking about who would make a great sheriff. And once
amen
you find,
to that.
Find it, when you find a man or a woman to do the job who's willing to be a David, stand as a David against the Goliath of these modern days, then we need to, latch on to that person, interview them, see what their values are, and encourage them to run.
Amen to that. All right. Ron Paul wrote an incredible column about some of the events happening in the Senate with Rand Paul. The mainstream press not telling you about it, but we will. Hang tight for details.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
With Liberty News this hour, I'm Dennis Daly. It would appear as though Britain will not be leaving the European Union until 2021. The Prime Minister there says she's willing to pay a significant tax to leave the EU. Meanwhile, one of the leaders of the Brexit movement told media that her vision for Brexit Britain is that we would leave in name only and all other current arrangements. The status quo will simply be renamed. He called the Prime Minister's statement, quote, a sellout of national interests and a betrayal of Brexit. Although Senator John McCain says he's not willing to vote for the Graham Cassidy, former Senator Rick Santorum says we'll get this to the finish line. The former senator said that everyone is working on the legislation, and by the time it is finished and Senator McCain is back in town, he would be able to look at it. There is a hearing scheduled this week, Santorum suggesting that McCain might yet switch his vote back to supporting it. Santorum said, quote, I'm feeling very good about the reaction and response that the bill has gotten, and there's a lot of support out there in the grassroots to get rid of affordable care. You're listening to LibertyNewsDaily.com.
Audio Compass is the perfect software solution for remote broadcasting. Consider Audio Compass for sporting events, talk show hosts, sound bites from the field, and more. Allow Audio Compass to transfer low delay, crystal clear audio over the internet. AudioCompass.com. Complete, accurate information has always been hard to find. For news the networks refuse to use anytime, anywhere, click to LibertyNewsDaily.com or sign up to get Liberty News delivered directly to your email. LibertyNewsDaily.com.
With Liberty News, I'm Dennis Daly.
We fought, we learned, we struggled,
we won.
Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
With news the networks refuse to use. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
The new media takes center stage. There's a lot of good things happening in America that you just don't hear about. We've repeated that theme for literally decades now. But there's a lot of good things happening, folks. And Ron Paul writes an incredible column about what Rand Paul is doing and others in the Senate. And you need to know about it. This column is spot on. Ron Paul Institute. Ron Paul writes a column about Rand Paul's amendment to repeal the authorization of force. You see, folks, we're in 130-plus nations, militarily speaking. Unconstitutional is all get out. And we need to realize that we cannot just have the Congress ignore their responsibility, lol.
Well, and you know what, Sam? We need people to realize that we have a responsibility. And until you and I, Sam, realize that it's you and me who's responsible for these wars going on in foreign lands, we are not going to be talking to our senators and our representatives about it, right? I mean, you and I have to raise the hue and the cry so that our representatives in Congress will raise the hue and cry and begin voting against these unconstitutional wars, right? I mean, Congress, in this authorization of force, it's been going on for, well, I guess since the World War II ended, basically, where the Congress has given up and basically, you know, said to the president, you know, if you think we should go to war, then you just go right ahead because we're not taking responsibility for going to war.
If it turns out bad, though, you own it, President. If it turns out good, we're going to just jump on wagon and take credit and jump in front of the train there now.
That's right, man. We're going to pat ourselves on the back if this goes well, but we're sure going to criticize the President if this war goes badly. Well, I can guarantee that the wars have gone badly since the 1950s, right? The police action in Korea, the war in Vietnam, and everything since then, they've gone badly, right? And so Congress doesn't want to take responsibility for that. But guess coffers of these representatives and senators in Congress? Well, big donors come from the military-industrial complex, and they get lots of money. It's a cash cow for them. Whenever we get involved in a war, it's a cash cow for them. They sell armaments to both sides, both the United States and to whatever country is involved in the war. And so that's their interest in war. It becomes a cash cow for them, a revenue-generating operation. So anyway, Congress benefits the people who serve in Congress. They get a lot of money from these lobbyists and these interests. And until we as a people rise up and are starting to ask our congressmen every time we see them, what are you doing to stop these foreign wars? What are you doing to stop the world hegemony, this empire building that the United States is doing? Until that happens, Sam, Congress is going to continue to vote in a way that assists the war effort. Now, Rand Paul, he is not part of that, and he wanted a vote on whether to rescind these, well, I guess repeal the war resolutions of 2001 and 2002. Remember, in Afghanistan was the 2001 war resolution, and 2002 was the Iraqi war resolution. And out of those two resolutions, Sam, we are now in like five or seven countries just fighting wars over there. And it's Rand said just a couple of weeks ago, he says, I don't think anyone here with an ounce of intellectual honesty believes that these authorizations from 16 years ago, 14 years ago, authorized war in seven different countries. But that's what's happening, Sam. And so his amendment to the NDAA, which is the National Defense Authorization Act that they pass every year to basically fund these military empire-building operations around the world, he wanted to vote on an amendment to the NDAA. And his amendment was to repeal these two war resolutions, and the Senate did not even allow a vote on the amendment. That's the bad news. Now, the good news is that there were almost 40 of the members of the Senate who did vote for an opportunity to consider the amendment. So that was a great step forward. You know, Ron, in his column, mentioned that he just had no hope that he would even get the vote, and he thought maybe there might be maybe a dozen people to vote for it. But getting almost 40% of the Senate to vote our way, he said, I call that a very good start.
Well, it just goes to show that we are making progress, even though the mainstream press doesn't cover it. People are starting to question, quote, the order of the day, and realize that there's a better way forward and that the checks and balances are critical. And the Congress needs to jealously guard its responsibility and its authority. And we really need to work on that. And it's gaining ground. It's gaining traction. I know it's not enough. I get it. But it's better than it was yesterday. And it'll be better tomorrow than it was today if we keep our hand to the plow, if you will.
Right. And Ron ends his column in these words, Sam. I just thought these were very insightful statements. Quote, the first step toward rebalancing the separation of powers is for Congress to reassert its authority and responsibility for declaring war. Exactly what we've been saying, right? To this point, he continues, Congress has preferred to transfer its war responsibility to the president. The second step, he says, going on here, once Congress understands its obligations, is to convince our representatives that war was not designed to be the first choice in foreign policy, but rather to be the last resort when we are under attack or when a direct attack is imminent. Wow. Now, and then one final paragraph here. He says, just because Congress decides to approve the use of force does not mean that war is just, justified, or wise. Congress is just as susceptible to war propaganda as the rest of America, and unfortunately, it is dominated by the false opinion that if you are not enthusiastic about U.S. military solutions to disputes overseas, then you are not being tough enough. In fact, it takes far more strength to exercise restraint in the face of the constant war propaganda and disinformation coming from the media and the neocons. End of quote.
He finishes by this idea that everybody says, well, we got to have a super strong president, somebody tough enough to get the job done. And Ron answers that beautifully.
He says, we should have, well, and he said this during the campaigns of 2011 and 2012. He says, we should have a strong president, strong enough to resist the temptation of taking power that a president should not have. I love that quote, Sam.
And I think that's critical to understand what real strength is. Strength, like a George Washington, to respect the checks and balances put in place by the founders, put in place by the will of the people via their representatives. That check and balance reality and the representation there behind it all shows what a republic is versus a democracy. All right, we want to move to Donald Trump's United Nations speech. There's a guy by the name of James George who wrote an article that appeared on Ron Paul Institute that breaks this down beautifully, sir.
He does, Sam. James characterizes Trump's speech as two different speeches, almost like the first half was written by one person and the second half written by another person. The first part of his speech was the rhetorical good one, in my opinion. And in the opinion of this James George, I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name, Jotras? Or...
Yeah, columnist, either way.
Okay. And he believes that the first part of his speech was authored by Stephen Miller. Now, I don't know who Stephen Miller is, but I certainly like his rhetoric.
Stephen Miller's a guy on the that's in the Trump campaign. We've interviewed him on the radio. Very nice guy.
Oh, cool.
And he's one of us, really.
Well, in writing this, Trump invoked the terms sovereign and sovereignty 21 times, Sam, in this part of the speech. He committed the United States to the principle of national sovereignty and to the truth that the nation, that, quote, the nation state remains the best vehicle for elevating the human condition, end quote. So I think this is way cool. Trump, you know, basically pointed out that these pertain not just to the United States and safeguarding of American sovereignty, but to all countries. Well, when's the last time you heard a president say that to the United Nations? He says, quote, in foreign affairs, we are renewing this founding principle of sovereignty. Our government's first duty is to its people, to our citizens, to serve their needs, to ensure their safety, to preserve their rights, and to defend their values. As President of the United States, I will always put America first, just like you, as the leaders of your countries, will always and should always put your countries first. End of quote.
Bottom line is, they're two different speeches. One says everything awesome. The other one takes it all back and sells us down the river. Mr. James George, whatever his last name is, concludes that the would-be swamp drainers have lost and the swamp has won. Very sobering, to say the least. Liberty Roundtable live in seconds.
Dear Christine, I wanted to write and tell you some exciting news.
What are you doing?
Oh, hi. I'm writing Christine a letter to tell her about Emily's first tooth.
At 2:00 in the morning?
It's a mom thing.
I'll get her.
I don't have the words to thank you for having the courage to give us our most precious gift. We can only thank you by raising her the way you'd always hoped. How'd you get her to sleep so fast?
It's a dad thing. Honey, will you tell her thanks from me?
Of course I will.
Adoption. It's about love. A message from LDS Family Services.
The word vigor is defined in the dictionary as health and strength in body and mind. Do you have enough health and strength in body and mind? Would you like to pursue life with passion? Would you like to know where you stand when it comes to your vigor score? That's right. There's a free scientific test you could take now that'll help you find out what your vigor score is. Then you can do things to improve that score. Did you know that? It's absolutely free, F-R-E-E free. All you got to do is get a hold of Kurt Crosby. You can do so, C-U-R-T, that's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at LibertyRoundtable.com. Or call Kurt at 801-669-2211. That's 801 669-2211. Would you like to learn about the scientifically proven vigor test? It's free. How would you like to improve your vigor score? Again, inexpensive solutions are available now. Call Kurt Crosby at 801-669-2211 or Kurt, C-U-R-T, at LibertyRoundtable.com for your free vigor score test today.
Promoting God, family, and country. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Radio.
All right, we've referred to this next issue over the years many times, but we never had a chance to give it a whole segment treatment like it deserves. And in light of what's happening with, you know, these different hurricanes in Texas and now Florida, in the Virgin Islands / Puerto Rico, etc., the goal, obviously, is well-intended, but the reality check is vital to understand. They want to appeal to the heartstrings of folks, but promote socialism. And we've talked about this Davy Crockett's story, Not Yours to Give, many times, but let's give it the complete treatment. The history, the relevance, the reality, where to find it, share it with your friends, tell the tale, if you will, because right now it's most critical. We do believe in doing something. It's how it ought to be done. That's key. Lowell?
Thank you, Sam. You can find this story in a browser search engine by just putting in the words Davy Crockett, Not Yours to Give. And this story will pop right up. You can find it on fee.org, F-E-E as in Frank Edward Edward, .org, Not Yours to Give. Marvelous story. We are going to highlight its essence here on the radio and encourage you to read it in full today, and then to share it with family and friends, particularly while the devastation of these hurricanes are fresh in our minds. That's when the temptation is the strongest for Congress to give away taxpayer money for these noble causes of helping our fellow men. And it's not that we're against helping our fellow men. We want to do that. We want to reach out and to serve and help and lift and help them recover their homes and their lives and put the pieces back together, but we don't want to force anybody to do that. And government, when government does that, you're basically saying that we're okay with using force to steal from everybody to give to the few and the needy who need the money, but that's absolutely wrong, ladies and gentlemen. It's your money that you can freely give, but nobody has the right to steal your money from you and give to others. So the story here with Davy Crockett, he was a member of Congress. He was a representative in the U.S. House of Representatives. Now, because he's so famous and there's so many songs and stuff written about Davy Crockett, some people grow up thinking he's just like a Paul Bunyan figment of someone's imagination. Well, not so. Davy Crockett was a real person. He served in the U.S. House of Representatives. He was killed at the Alamo in Texas. And what a storied life he lived, yes, but this next story is probably the one that I most fondly remember when I think of Davy Crockett. All the good things he did for this country, this story epitomizes the contribution that he made. So one day in the House of Representatives, a bill was being considered that would appropriate some money for the benefit of a widow of a distinguished naval officer, and of course several beautiful speeches were made in his support, and the speaker was just about to put the question, meaning that they were about to vote on it, when Davy Crockett arose. And he stood in opposition to the bill. He said, "Mr. Speaker, I have as much respect for the memory of the deceased and as much sympathy for the sufferings of the living, if suffering there be, as any man in this House. But we must not permit our respect for the dead or our sympathy for a part of the living to lead us into an act of injustice to the balance of the living. I will not go into an argument to prove that Congress has no power to appropriate this money as an act of charity. Every member upon this floor knows it. We have the right, as individuals, to give away as much of our own money as we please in charity, but as members of Congress, we have no right. So, to appropriate a dollar of the public money." And so he continued, he says, "Mr. Speaker, I have said we have the right to give as much money of our own as we please, and I am the poorest man on this floor. I cannot vote for this bill, but I will give 1 week's pay to the object, and if every member of Congress will do the same, it will amount to more than the bill asks. End of quote. So basically, when it was put to a vote, the bill wasn't approved, and it failed. And later, when he was asked about his opposition to the bill, Davy Crockett explained that a farmer in his district named Horatio Bunce had talked to him about Congress's appropriation of $20,000 to help with the residents of Georgetown after a fire left many of them homeless and suffering out in the cold. And so Bunce was out plowing in his field one day when Crockett happened upon him. Crockett was back in his home territory, you know, soliciting support for his campaign to be reelected. And when Crockett asked Bunce for his support, Bunce replied he had voted for Crockett once before but would not do so again. Well, Crockett asked why. And Bunce explained, well, Colonel, because Davy Crockett was a colonel in the Army, he's called Colonel Crockett. He says, well, Colonel, you gave a vote last winter that shows either you have not capacity to understand the Constitution or that you are wanting in the honesty and firmness to be guided by it. Your understanding of the Constitution is very different from mine. The Constitution, to be worth anything, must be held sacred and rigidly observed in all its provisions. The man who wields power and misinterprets it is the more dangerous, the more honest he is. And so Crockett replied, he says, okay, Bunce, I admit the truth of what you say, but there must be some mistake here. I don't remember giving a vote last winter upon any constitutional question. And so then Bunce, you got to listen to what Bunce said next. He says, this is truly, Sam, a great example for all of us citizens whose job it is to be watchdogs of our public servants. Bunce says, no, Colonel, there's no mistake. Though I live here in the backwoods and seldom go from home, I take the papers from Washington and read very carefully all the proceedings of Congress. My papers say that last winter you voted for a bill to appropriate $20,000 to some sufferers by a fire in Georgetown. Is that true? And so Crockett admitted that it was true, but asked why Bunce was complaining about a paltry $20,000 to relieve the suffering of women and children, given the fact that we have such a rich country and a full treasury. Well, Bunce replied, he said, it is not the amount, Colonel, that I complain of. It is the principle. In the first place, the government ought to have in the treasury no more than enough for its legitimate purposes, but that has nothing to do with the question. He says the power of collecting and dispersing money at pleasure is the most dangerous power that can be entrusted to man, particularly under our system of collecting revenue by a tariff, which reaches every man in the country, no matter how poor he may be. And the poorer he is, the more he pays in proportion to his means. What is worse, Bunce continued, it presses upon him without his knowledge where the weight centers, for there is not a man in the United States who can ever guess how much he pays to the government. So you see that while you are contributing to relieve one, you are drawing it from thousands who are even worse off than he. If you had the right to give anything, the amount was simply a matter of discretion with you, and you have as much right to give 20 million as 20,000. If you have the right to give to one, you have the right to give to all. And as the Constitution neither defines charity nor stipulates the amount, you are at liberty to give any and everything which you may believe or profess to believe is a charity, and to any amount you may think proper. You will very easily perceive what a wide door this would open for fraud and corruption and favoritism on the one hand, and for robbing the people on the other. No, Colonel, Congress has no right to give charity. Individual members may give as much of their own money as they please, but they have no right to touch a dollar of the public money for that purpose. If twice as many houses had been burned in this county as in Georgetown, neither you nor any other member of Congress would have thought of appropriating a single dollar for our relief. There are about 240 members of Congress, and if they had shown their sympathy for the sufferers by contributing each one week's pay, it would have made $13,000. There are plenty of wealthy men in and around Washington who could have given $20,000 without depriving themselves of even a luxury of life. The congressmen chose to keep their own money, which, if reports be true, some of them spend not very creditably, and the people about Washington, no doubt, applauded you for relieving them of the necessity of giving by giving what was not yours to give. The people have delegated to Congress, by the Constitution, the power to do certain things. To do these, it is authorized to collect and pay monies and for nothing else. Everything beyond this is usurpation and a violation to the Constitution. So to his credit, Crockett admitted his mistake in saying, well, my friend, you hit the nail on the head when you said I had not enough sense to understand the Constitution. I intended to be guided by it and thought I'd studied it. I've heard many speeches in Congress, but what you have said here at the plow today has got more hard sound sense in it than all of the fine speeches I have ever heard. And Crockett then promised never, ever to cast again a vote for charity, and he asked for Bunce's support. Well, Bunce said he would support Crockett upon one condition, if Crockett would tell the people of his district about the vote and that he was wrong to have done so. Crockett immediately agreed to do that, and that's what he did. Spent the rest of his time out campaigning, telling people about his vote, his bad vote, why it was wrong, and his promise to never do it again. And so as the story goes on, that a week or so later, Crockett returned to Bunce's place to speak to his constituents. And Crockett and Bunce stayed up all night talking late into the night, talking about the principles and the affairs of government. So basically, Bunce, Horatio Bunce, was teaching Davy Crockett, the congressman, more truth, more real knowledge about the principles of the Constitution that week or that night than he had gotten in all of his life before then. That is the power, Sam. That's the power of a knowledgeable activist.
Horatio Bunce, ladies and gentlemen, is a striking example of responsible citizenship, and that's what we're hoping all Americans will do. Educate their representatives in such a way to solicit an understanding, and then let that be the example. Just imagine if we had, it's not yours to give, to be the slogan for Congress. You know what? We love charity. We love service. We love kindness to our fellow men, but not by force and not by the arm of government, ladies and gentlemen. What an incredible example. Share it with your friends. Tell the tale of liberty everywhere you go, Lowell.
I will, Sam. Thanks for having me on this morning.
Thank you, my friend. Godspeed.
You're welcome.
Just imagine if we had a bunch of Lowell Nelsons hanging around everywhere. You know, I don't know how to clone people, but I'm telling you right now, you know, you get a Horatio Bunce, you get a Davy Crockett, you get a Lowell Nelson, a Kurt Crosby, a few of those good, honest, hard-working patriots, and man, we could change the nation, couldn't we, ladies and gentlemen? It just takes a little bit from a lot of people. Lots of hands make heavy work light, if you will. The power of one becomes two, then the few, and then it's incredible what can be accomplished. Don't let them let you believe that we're not making a difference, because we are. LibertyRoundtable.com, get involved, donate, would you please? We declare this nation shall endure.